This broadcast is Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. I'm Jeff Pedro, and I'm in with Mark Avery. And our facility is located at 2031 Dryden Road, right across from DP&L in Moraine. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914, and we'd be more than glad to discuss with you any of your firearms-related interests or needs. If you'd like to get on the radio show today, please give us a call here at the studio at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'll get you in the queue, and we'll get you on the line as soon as we can. I want to start off today's show by talking a little bit. It's been 1 year since the tragedy at Sandy Hook. It's a tragedy that it's tough to talk about, but I think there needs to be some issues since it is in the news. It's something that we remember to forget, if you can understand what I'm saying there. We remember what happened, but we like to forget, but there's issues. And Mark and I were talking, several people call it the first anniversary. It's not the anniversary, because an anniversary implies a celebration. And as I've heard several of the victims' family members and friends and school personnel talking recently, they said it's a time when we reflect and we remember and celebrate the lives of the children and school staff who died that day, and then we can also reflect and think a little bit about the struggles that the survivors will endure for the rest of their lives, particularly this time of year. I happened to listen to an interview last night where seven of the victims' family members were being interviewed, and they said it's as real today sometimes, or any day, as it is the day that it occurred. And for those of you that have been mired with tragedy in your life, you know that feeling. It's not a good feeling, but it's a reality. And they said the things that we have to do, and this applies to all of us, we have to move on, we have to look forward, because if we look backward, we get stuck in a hole, and it makes it difficult to progress.
You can't forget, but by the same token, you can't focus on it.
Exactly. Such tragedies, you know, we talk about tragedy, and a thing, they provoke in many cases, or they spark different sorts of issues. And obviously, when that incident occurred last year, there was a massive movement to restrict access to certain types of guns and ammunition and magazines. There were call outs to modify and pull in the reins on the mental health system and all the other related issues. And I think we're making progress in some of them. The state of Connecticut, I think, kind of moved far ahead, and they restricted certain types of firearms, and they restricted magazines to no more than 10 rounds, and implying that that's going to make a difference. And some of that is feel good legislation, quite frankly. It doesn't have a whole lot of relevancy to the reality of violent shootings. But that's what they decided to do. They've got a lot of pushback from the gun community, the pro gun community. But that was something that they did, and maybe it's going to make a difference. Likely it's not going to make a whole lot of difference. But what I wanted to mention is that when you have tragedies like this, and I want to compare that tragedy to a current tragedy that I was involved in over the last week. We had, and many of you in the news heard about the fatal fire we had in Kettering, that obviously four people lost their lives, and the tragedy of a critical incident shooting and the tragedy of a fire, for the people involved and the family members, the tragedy's equal. It doesn't matter if they're shot or if they're burned in a fire or whatever. The feelings are real. They have to be dealt with. And it's something that we have to move forward with. And just as this past week, we've had several people come on the television talking about making sure your smoke detectors have updated batteries, making sure you don't leave the portable heaters close to places where they can catch fire, the Christmas lights, making sure that they're strung properly and they're not overloading particular circuits. So there's good that comes to that. As we reflect back on the lives of the victims, there's things that we benefit from, and that helps us move forward. I wanted to also mention that recently, in the last couple of weeks, the AG report from the state of Connecticut, Newtown, Connecticut, was published, and one of the main issues there was that it emphasized the mental health issues concerning the killer were probably one of the most noteworthy factors in the whole incident. And The problem is, as a nation, we're struggling with that. We're struggling with ways to rein in the process so that we can, I don't even want to use the word detect, because I think it's almost impossible regardless of how complicated the process gets. I don't know that we're going to detect. Maybe we can detect some of the signs and symptoms, but just as I was discussing with Mark, for the few cases that they're going to have to study that aren't going to be statistically significant, the signs and symptoms of individuals who later become mass killers are exhibited by many, many hundreds, if not thousands, of people who don't become mass killers.
That'd be like saying if you have a driver's license and if you ever got a ticket, then it's possible that you might at some point drive intoxicated and kill somebody, and therefore anybody that ever gets a ticket is not allowed to drive.
Right.
I mean, that's just as ridiculous.
So there are some arguments out there, and I know you have opinions about them, and I want you to call in if you want to discuss some of those issues. But the other thing I will mention about the report is that the commentator or the author of the report, who was the attorney general or the state's attorney, did go and put a considerable amount of blame on the mother who legally purchased all the firearms but did not take adequate measures to secure those firearms and keep them from her son, who the reports and by her own admissions, there were difficult issues that she'd been dealing with him throughout his lifetime. Now, the other side of that, one of the things the mother did to encourage interaction with her son was go to the shooting range and shoot and engage in mother-son time together that was productive on all accounts. He was obviously, according to the report, and again, I'm relying on data that they acquired throughout an intensive investigation and reveal most of, not all, but most of in this particular report, where she was dealing with a troubled child and trying to establish that bond with a child that we all do. And I know as a parent, we're kind of many times we're stuck in dilemmas where we will compromise certain things with the hope of trying to get it to accomplish a greater good. So not in her defense, but as a explanation as to why some of those things happen, I think that could have been one of the things going through her head. And keep in mind, she's one of the victims. She was killed.
Absolutely.
She was killed right before he went on his killing spree at Newtown, and that often gets forgotten, but the mother was killed before any of the other people were killed, and it was equally tragic.
And in fact, she had been a victim for years before that,
yes,
but just not killed.
Yes, having to deal with that situation, that troubling situation day to day, and you know, turning to a mental health system, according to the report, that did in you know, all their accounts as much as they possibly could, given the circumstances. So I'm sure she felt at a loss on occasion, and doesn't excuse what he did. What he did was horrific, and he paid the ultimate price. He's gone, and he has to deal with that when he goes to the next level. But she certainly had a problem there. But I just want, as we reflect back, I want you just to look at the broader picture and keep in mind that the anti-gun rhetoric continues to flow. We've had Mark's quoted some or pointed out some recent efforts by Meg to take some of the
Mayors Against Illegal Guns done some unbelievable things in terms of dancing in the blood of the victims. And yes, they started the next day after it occurred. They didn't even really let it go a full day. They've been doing it. And then every opportunity they get, they bring these people out and they set them up and they set them in front of a microphone and they give them a script and they play on people's emotions, which, it's effective. It's not legitimate necessarily, but it's effective. And they try very hard to get their point across. And the only way they can get their point across is through emotions, because the facts don't support their case.
Yep. And they've cranked it up over the last week. I've seen at least four or five emails come through where they're trying to promote the agenda. We talked last 2 weeks about what they did with the Thanksgiving Day placemats, discussion points around the Thanksgiving table. Absolutely
absurd.
Ridiculous and absurd, not founded on any basis factual information, but just to throw out those ideas and try to persuade people to believe the way they believe, which was totally out of line. But I'm not going to give them any more time because they're not worthy of it. I just want to say that as we reflect back, just some things to think about in the same report and in some references when they talk about this was a Bushmaster AR-M4 type rifle, that one of the firearms that was used in this case. One of the statistics quoted in some of the after-action report summaries by commentators was that the 2012 FBI Uniform Crime Reports, which is a pretty good, pretty accurate database, recorded 8,800 fatalities attributed to firearms in 2012. And of those 8,800, only 332 were done by the classification of rifles as a whole. So even if we assume, and that wasn't the case, they were all M4AR type rifles, you're looking at about 3.5%. I'm not good at math, but I know it was less than 4, and I know it was a little bit more than 3. So it was about 3.5% of the killings in 2012 were done by the category of rifles. So you know, when you look at the facts, they just don't support the hype and the emotion that many of the anti-gun people are trying to do to get us to believe that it's those evil black guns that are causing the carnage. It's not the case. It's individuals, and we have to continue to deal with individuals. And one other thing I wanted to mention, there's a law, and I can't remember one of the bills that's being pushed through the Ohio legislature right now that has to do with additional punishment or enhancing punishments for people. I'm sorry, it's not enhancing punishments. It's making mandatory that people put firearms in safes or otherwise lock them up. Well, here's the deal. You got to understand there's current law already in place and enforced where an individual who has firearms, who allows someone to illegitimately obtain those firearms, they can be charged with either reckless assault or reckless homicide if somebody ultimately acquires a firearm and does something that they're not supposed to do. So there's laws already on the books. And again, we have to stop legislating individual behavior. We have to, the responsible gun owners in the state of Ohio and throughout this country do responsible things in the overwhelming majority of the cases.
The bill that Jeff is talking about is House Bill 301, and it's from Representative Patman, who is he's a classic anti-gun advocate. He has stood up and really made a fool of himself on the floor of the House in opposition to most of the bills that have since passed, and it's really sad. I mean, it's unfortunate that his constituents don't see what's going on and look at that and say, "I'm sorry, that's enough. You're not making any sense. It's time for you to go find someplace else to be successful because you're not doing it here." And vote him out in the next election. But maybe his constituents agree with some of his positions. I don't know. I certainly hope not. We need to take our first break for the hour. But if you'd like to be part of this discussion, please call the studio at 457-1290. 457-1290 will get you into the master control suite, and we'll get you up on the board. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show, and right before we go out to the phones, I just want to make one more comment about the law we were discussing before the break, and that's from a gun owner's perspective. The big thing is responsible gun ownership carries with it the responsibility to secure your firearms, making sure that they do not get in the hands of people that should not possess them, whether that's children in your home, other adults who come to visit. If you take your firearm somewhere else, you make sure that it's properly secured in your vehicle or whatever the circumstances are, so that people who should not be getting a hold of them don't. And that's the bottom line. And I just have to tell you, in my world, we're very used to that. However, in the enforcement end of my world, I've seen cases where people haven't been responsible. And we have to continue to move forward in that direction and encourage people that they have to make sure that their firearms are properly secured at all times, whether they're on their person, in a safe, or otherwise secured with adequately effective firearm securing devices, whether it's a trigger guard or a cable lock, whatever the case might be. So let's go out to the phone.
And we did, yeah, we had just not too long ago, a couple years ago, we had two kids on opposite ends of town within a week that shot themselves because they picked up a gun in their own home that had been improperly secured. And that's a problem. That's something that is absolutely required for personal responsibility. Let's go out and talk to Sean, who's calling in from Sydney. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
We're doing great. How can we, what would you like to add to this today?
Yeah, so I got a couple comments. One, the law being that they want to try to pass about securing our weapons in a safe or a locked device. everybody should have safety in mind, and education with the children, all is very important. But the thing is, if that would ever get passed, that would give the criminals the information that it's safer for them to cause harm or break into our homes or whatever we have. I work with a lot of people, and the majority of the people I work with are either pro-gun or they're just not getting their concealed weapon permits. And I just want to know your thoughts on that. If you would think that would give the criminals more permission to cause harm to our families if they know we have to have our weapons locked up.
Well, I don't know that permission is the word. It might certainly give them the motivation to think that's
right.
The case. But most people that carry a gun for personal safety and self-defense or have a gun around the home for personal safety and self-defense have it properly secured and stored for easy and quick access. Now, the legislation, and I haven't read the specific language, but if there's wording in there that says any time a gun is in the home other than on the person, it must be secured in a locked case or have a locked trigger lock, whatever the case, that's not really practical. And here's the other part. Here's the critical part. Who is going to enforce that? There's no way to enforce it unless something happens after the fact. And my point that I said earlier in the show kicks in. If something happens where someone gets a gun that they shouldn't have, and something happens, whether somebody get critically injured or killed, that person's going to be charged criminally anyway, and that investigation is going to lead down that course.
Right. Another question I have is when it comes to hollow points, which do you think is better to carry for personal defense, hollow points or solid points?
Well, we'll come back to that right after the break. We have to take our next break here, and we'll address that issue as soon as we come back.
Sean, thanks very much for calling the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. We'll head on over to Darrell Bauer in the News Center on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show, and if you'd like to get on the show today, please give us a call here in the studio at 457-1290, and we'll get you in the queue and on the air as soon as we can. One other comment I wanted to make relative to what I discussed at the top of the hour, kind of the fallout to these tragic incidents that occur, something that you've seen. Obviously, there was a shooting yesterday. Preliminary indications occurred out in Colorado. A disgruntled student, a high school student, comes into the school with a shotgun looking for a particular teacher. Again, we're getting kind of mixed results or mixed information right now.
Still
early investigation. But the teacher somehow gets wind of the fact that this person's looking for him. He flees out of the school with, I presume, the intention that this person's going to follow him out of the school. Well, in the meantime, two students, one in particular, tries to subdue the other student, and that one gets shot and is in critical condition. And the individual, the suspect, shot a second student who's in, I think, fair condition at the present time. And then I believe he committed suicide.
That's the report that I have, the one girl was in critical condition. Two other students were treated for minor injuries and released.
But the point I wanted to make relative to that was the other spin out of Sandy Hook and related incidents is that many of the schools are getting into the target hardening process where they're looking at ways to better secure their buildings, and they're incorporating different techniques for notification and spreading the word. And the one thing that I see missing most of the time is the reality of having armed personnel, whether it's armed school personnel, security personnel, police officers on or off duty, whatever the case is. It's not as readily talked about, and I don't know that the educational community has evolved to the point where they're ready to do that. In fact, locally, I'm sad to report that the majority of people I've talked to are not only wanting to hear more about it, they kind of err on the side of we don't want guns in the schools. And some of the officials involved in the decision-making process are making comments like that's only complicating it. And the one thing they say all the time when I have discussions is, what if we allow teachers to have guns, trained or not trained? And, of course, they're going to be trained. Anybody
Absolutely.
With any sensibilities at all, they're going to be trained, and they're going to be highly trained, and they're going to be required to go through periodic requalification. But the one argument I always get is, what if that teacher innocently shoots a student while they're trying to stop the bad guy? Well, the simple response, and I don't know that I even have to insult our listeners' intelligence by telling you that the simple response is, what if we do nothing and the bad guy kills multiple people, students, staff, and anybody else? That argument is just so lame, and I'm quite frankly sick of hearing it. It doesn't carry any weight at all, and it's just simply a uninformed reaction from people who just think that there's better ways to do it. But the bottom line is, and places I know in Texas and in Utah, and some place in Chardon, Ohio, they've recognized the fact that the best way to stop a violent person with evil intent with a gun is with a good person who's ready, willing, and capable with a gun. And they're taking measures to make sure they have armed personnel on the ground so that they can respond and minimize the carnage. I don't know that we're ever going to eliminate it, but we certainly can minimize it by having rapid response.
Well, I think the right answer, I mean, the right word is to stop it. You're not going to be able to prevent it, but you can stop it from happening if you have people who are, as you say, ready, willing, and equipped and able and trained and properly prepared mentally to deal with the situation and do what's necessary. Even though your experience in this area has been kind of disappointing in that most of the schools simply are unwilling to deal with it, there are some number of schools, school districts in Ohio, about 20 plus, and I'm not going to go in any more detail than that, but that have said, you know, there's a problem here, and the best solution to that is to deal with it with someone on site who's already here and is trained and is ready and willing to do what's necessary at the moment that it's necessary and not wait for somebody to show up.
Here's the dialogue that I would like to engage in with people who would want to have an informed discussion about the topic. When you're talking about all the issues, particularly effectiveness of the remedy that you're trying to implement and cost, I'm going to tell you that having armed people on the premises, ready, willing, capable, trained, willing to do that is the least expensive and the most effective way. And I can argue that with factual data based on situations. One example I want to mention in Sandy Hook, for example, I mentioned earlier the district attorney's report, the shooting was over in about 6 minutes. Law enforcement response, the shooting was over as the initial responders were pulling into the parking lot.
It was the sirens that he heard, that as best it was reported anyway, that he heard them and said, I guess I'm done. So he took himself out.
Right. He ran into some complicating factors inside, according to the report, as far as the guns not functioning as well as he wanted them to. And that could have been the product of nervousness, because I can't believe anybody would just be doing this and, you know, freedom of movement and everything. You know, when you go to load an AR rifle, for example, if the bolt's forward and you have a full magazine, it's going to be difficult. And there was some discussion in here about notably jammed guns and jammed magazines that could have been problematic, that he kind of felt that the time goes fast and then it goes slow and then it goes fast again. And like Mark says, he hears the sirens and he realizes he doesn't have much time. He's in a futile situation and he does what he did. And that's that. But I just want to close out that topic by saying that there's a lot of issues that still need to be discussed. And I would hope that when the discussions occur, they invite the people with information on both sides to discuss it so that the full realm of options can be discussed and ultimately the most effective means be implemented, as opposed to the knee-jerk reactions that I think many of the people involved in the process are engaging in and implementing. They're superficial in many cases. So we'll leave it at that. And if you have a comment, please call us here at the show at 457-1290, and we'll be more than glad to get you in the air and let you air your opinion. Either way, we said one of the purposes of this show is to encourage meaningful dialogue on controversial topics. And I ask that when you call in, present your argument. We've had many cases where we've had people call in with very insightful information and that well thought out issues that they've talked through themselves, and they back it with some data. So I encourage you, if you're so inclined, to do so. I want to switch gears a little bit and mention tomorrow is the annual Bill of Rights Day. Now, Bill of Rights Day, I think, compared to other holidays, especially this time of year, kind of gets passed over. But I just want to draw a little bit of attention to it today and remind you that it's an extremely important day, because without the Bill of Rights, we probably wouldn't be enjoying the holiday season that we're about to embark upon in the next couple of weeks, and our country wouldn't be the way it is. And it is particularly relevant today because there are pretty hard-hitting attacks on our rights occurring on a daily basis You don't even need to turn on the news. You know it from discussions with your coworkers and with your family members and with your people that you're around on a regular basis, that these things are happening. And, you know, Bill of Rights Day is an important day. It's recognition for a, if you read the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution, they're powerful. They're meaningful. They had as much meaning then as they have now. And there's people, granted, they're subject to interpretation, but the people, those founding fathers that scripted that language, they were insightful. They knew that one of the issues was they were going to be fearful of a tyrannical government trying to impose its will on the people. And I just read today, because there's several sites, if you do an online search on Bill of Rights Day, origin of Bill of Rights Day, you get all kinds of interesting sites. And several of the sites had to do with educational outlines that the school teachers in the schools at the K through 12 and then college level could use to help maybe incorporate that into a history lesson this week or next, and use some of the lessons and some of the exercises that will help the students better understand what those Bill of Rights are. But you know, it's so critical when you look at that language and you think about what they were talking about over 200 years ago, and you apply it to what's going on in the world today. They were extremely intelligent, insightful individuals. So, you know, I encourage you to go out and read them. Look at the first 10 amendments, particularly the first, the second, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the eighth. Some of the others, you know, they have relevancy, but I'm talking everyday life and things that we apply every day.
Well, you know, when you look at what's going on in Washington, the 9th and 10th Amendments might have a lot more relevance than some people have given them credit for. Granted, there's not been too many people who have been forced to quarter soldiers, so the 3rd Amendment doesn't seem to get as much attention these days, although that has happened, and that's part of the reason why that was put in. But how many people do you know, and for those of you out there listening, just ask yourself, can you name what the 5 rights are that are guaranteed by the First Amendment? And can you actually say what the words are, the 27 words of the Second Amendment? Do you understand what they are? Can you actually, if somebody said, well, what is the Second Amendment? Can you say, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed? Do you understand what those words mean? Well, if you look at today's laws, it's a little hard to compare them and say, well, we're obvious that must not be what it means, because if it did, then we couldn't have many of these laws that we currently have. And quite frankly, that's the problem. People have not been paying attention as much as they should have, and they allow certain things to continue that should never have continued, should have been stopped a long time ago, and it started early in the 20th century. I mean, this is not something that's recent. This goes back back to, in fact, even the late 1800s. So this is something that I think it's important that people pay attention to, and this is a good opportunity, a good reminder. The 15th of December this year is the 224th anniversary of the ratification of the Bill of Rights. Let's go out to the phones, and we'll talk to Steve, who's calling from Wilmington. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, I appreciate it.
How would you like to... Go ahead.
Yeah, I was listening to you talking about the school shootings. And, you know, for a while we've heard people float the idea of having, you know, armed guards. And is it going to be former law enforcement or off-duty or former military and all this? And I tell you, I think if we just go back to that, that's overthinking it. If we just go back to the simple free exercise of our Second Amendment rights, the situation's going to work itself out. You have parents who are allowed to be armed when they drop off and pick up their kids. You have teachers who are going to be allowed to be armed as they see fit. And, you know, once again, rather than try to come up with a bunch of rules and caveats and exceptions to how we're going to have this free exercise, I think if we just go back and say, hey, Second Amendment right, bear arms as you see fit, I think it's going to work itself out.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's exactly what needs to happen. And unfortunately, 3 communities, the legal community, the medical community, and the education community, are among the most anti-gun because of the way they're brought through their schooling, the way the philosophy that gets given to them as they get those credentials. Most of those people are vehemently anti-gun, and so now convincing them that you need to change your perspective and instead do exactly what the Constitution says, exactly what the Bill of Rights says, and just bring what you have with you and be prepared to do that. We need to take our last break for the hour. Steve, thanks very much for calling the show. We'll be back after this break. Give us a call at 457-1290, and we'll get you up on the show in those last few minutes. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show, and we only have a few minutes left, and I want to alert our listeners to a couple of things that we brought up last week. We have our 12 Days of Christmas sale that is in full motion now, and we have some rock-bottom, can't-beat prices on all of our inventory of handguns, rifles, and shotguns. You can take a look at that sale flyer on the Range
email.
Range email, and also Mark's going to go ahead and put it up on the
On our Facebook page.
Yeah,
Jeff's not a big Facebook fan. He can't even remember the name of it.
And you'll be able to get that, but it's a very nice flyer, and it gives you some great deals. In addition, we're going to offer you 30, 60, or 90 days. I termed it same as cash, but it comes down to a layaway program so that you can purchase that over time without any interest, and we can secure it because after the new year, probably a lot of them are going to start drying up for a very short period of time. So if you've got something you want, we have a good inventory. And in addition to the terms, you'll get a $25 gift card for any gun that you purchase. And the way Mark's working that, my son, is if you want to go ahead and apply it toward the purchase of the gun or toward some training, he'll let you do that. But we're going to give you certainly great incentives for you to come in and make some smoking deals on some firearms. In addition, while you're there, go ahead and purchase a ticket to our Christmas raffle. We have raffle tickets that are $10 a piece and three for $25, and we have great prizes. First prize is your choice of any in-stock handgun that we have. Second prize is a Remington 870 Express shotgun, and third prize is a Ruger 10/22 rifle. And we will be making that drawing during our last-minute Christmas Eve sale, probably around noon on Christmas Eve. So if you want to come in and get tickets, please do so.
We had a question, a caller that called in off the air and had a question about what the status is on House Bill 203, which would do many things in terms of changing reciprocity and allow for out-of-state license. In other words, you could a non-resident license in Ohio, which is currently not available. And one of the things that has drawn a lot of attention is the change in the training requirement, which currently is 12 hours. In the initial bill, it went down to, and without specifying a duration, and instead of specifying a time frame and a location, which is to say 10 hours in the range and 10 hours in the classroom and 2 hours in the range, they went to specify certain things that must be covered. I personally kind of think that there ought to be maybe all of that. I don't know that the time of 12 hours is really as relevant as making sure certain things are covered. And personally, I'd like to see a standard qualification and a standard test so that you know that the people that are getting their licenses have at least had this much information and skill level. Anyway, the status on that is that the bill has passed through the House. It has gone over to the Senate, and there hasn't been anything yet happened in the Senate, and there probably won't be anything happened in the Senate until after the beginning of the new year because they're about ready to break, if they haven't already, for the Christmas. And so there's not going to be any progress on that until the beginning of 2014. So we'll keep an eye on it, and we'll let you know what information there is. But right now there's nothing more than it has passed the House.
The other program I'm going to let you in on was our Try It Before You Buy It program down at the range. We're going to extend the 2-for-1 through the holiday season because so many people are coming in and they're saying, I'm torn between this gun and that gun. Well, we're going to give you the opportunity to shoot them both side by side. The way it works is you come in, you pay one fee of $10. You'll take one gun out, you'll shoot it. You'll have to obviously clear that gun, put it back in its case, bring it back out, and we'll let you shoot a second gun so you can compare them, you know, one after the other. And then if you're so inclined, you can bring that one back and shoot the other one to make your final decision. And if you decide to buy a gun right there on the spot, we'll take the cost of that $10 rental fee off of the price of the gun. And like I told you, right now, if you look at that sale flyer, and it is available in hard copy at the front desk if you don't have access to the computer and you want to see it right there, we can make some great deals for you right there on the spot.
Thanks very much for being with us today. We've had a good time. I hope you did too. We'll see you next week. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290. News Talk Radio, WHIO.